So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Ollie Mann. On today's show, can Chris Evans revitalise Murdoch's radio dreams, the war on disinformation, and Amazon's latest moves onto Netflix territory? Plus, our panel discuss the creeping spread of The Telegraph's paywall, Global's foray into street ad marketing, and in the media quiz, we pit the finest minds in this room against the brains behind Radio 4's new quiz book. It's all to come in today's media podcast. And joining us today is Steve Ackerman, MD of content company Something Else. Now, Steve, our listeners should know that by far the most exciting piece of content you have in the pipeline is a 6-part audio documentary about weight loss hosted by me. But what more minor projects do you have coming up?
Do you know what, Ollie? I didn't even know that we
did
had
you not? Such a vast indie, Steve. You didn't even know about the exciting work.
What else is going on? Probably the current recent headlines are the Can You Feel It series on the BBC,
which Your is dance music.
Dance, yeah, which has done extremely well. And also this week we released the first of our original podcasts with the first one is with Katie Piper, who's starring in Strictly at the moment. It's called Katie Piper's Extraordinary People, and she meets other amazing people who've been through moments of adversity and come out and provided inspiration.
And is there a brand involved in that? I was sitting in your lobby the other day and I thought, God, you do well working with all these different advertisers.
There will be a sponsor coming down the track on that, yeah.
Okay. And alongside him, the man who put Love Island in your ears, it's Matt Deegan from Folder Media.
Wow. There's an introduction.
Now, you've been to every radio conference going on over the summer, including organising one of them. So what have you learnt?
So I think there's becoming a greater maturity in audio and podcasts. I think some of the playing is maybe over, and people are taking it very seriously now. And if you're going to do it, you've got to do it properly. I think that's what we're hearing.
He's looking me straight into the whites of my eyes as he says this. I'm concerned my jocular tone is striking the wrong balance. And what else? What was the best thing that happened at Next Radio for you? This is the radio conference.
There was a great session on brainstorming being bullshit. Mm-hmm. And like brainstorming is the idea that you drag 10 people into a room, blank sheet of paper, and try and come up with some ideas. Is an idea from the 50s. It's been thoroughly debunked by science, but we all still do it all the time. And this great guy called Wade Kingsley from Australia just gave some thoughts and tips about how to think differently about coming up with ideas. Varying stuff from where you do it to doing things in pairs, being very successful, be it kind of Lennon and McCartney or Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. You know, the combination of two people can be quite good. Other thing he said was, chefs don't sit down and invent new vegetables. They take vegetables and they come up with a great new meal. I thought it was a better way of thinking than starting with a blank sheet of paper.
It's interesting as well, isn't it, Steve, how much brainstorming, if we are still going to be calling it that, still really works when it's face-to-face. Like, you know, I do all kinds of things via Slack and text messaging and WhatsApp and email, but actually the best ideas often are when you're together with someone else working on something.
It's called human contact.
Is it?
It's right. Very powerful. It's a very powerful thing for all forms of communication.
Not more powerful than podcasting, surely, Matt Diggin. No.
Of course not.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the big radio announcements over the summer. Lauren Laverne being moved to Six Music Breakfast. Greg James, of course, starting his new breakfast show on Radio 1. Eddie Mayer at LBC. Probably the biggest one, though, was Chris Evans. Is he Europe's biggest radio host, I believe? Yeah. Moving to Virgin after 8 years at Radio 2. Before we talk about Zoe Ball, who's replacing him, first on his move, Matt, why do you think he decided to go?
So I think it's a few different things. I think number one, he was a bit annoyed about having to publish how much he was paid. Number two, his pay would be going down anyway. I think he's also at the sort of top of his game. And I think we saw this with Christian O'Connell as well when he moved to Australia. I think some talent are thinking they want to test themselves. Is this, have I got this skill, or is it the station that's around me? And I mean, oh my God, there's no bigger challenge than going from a breakfast show that has 9.6 million listeners to one that currently has 166,000. So I think, yeah, and I think also the support of News Corp around him and that show, I think, will be quite interesting.
Yeah, so this is what many listeners still think of as Murdoch Inc., basically, right? But a lot of listeners might not realise they own Talk Radio, Talk Sport, and Virgin. Steve, do you think for them this is a strategy that can pay off, getting in the biggest talent for the tiniest music radio station?
Well, they clearly do, because they put their money where their mouth is. And I think it's fascinating that you have an organisation who, don't forget, were in radio many years ago. They originally were part of the people backing Kelvin McKenzie when he bought Talk Radio. They pulled out again, and now they're back in, and back in a fairly significant and aggressive way. And I suppose the exciting thing is, for the first time in a long time, we're seeing a radio market hot up again in terms of talent and the drive for sort of premium content. And look, I mean, these people are not stupid. They are very, very smart business people, and they clearly see audio and radio as being a key part of how the empire can broaden out beyond newspapers and obviously the weaknesses that are inherent around the newspaper industry.
But when Chris Evans was last on Virgin, Matt, they had a decent slice of London, at least, didn't they, on FM? And they had a nationwide medium wave signal, neither of which things they have now or are relevant now.
It isn't so relevant. So, you know, Six Music, well, that's 2.6 million, Absolute 80s, Kistory, 1.7, 1.8, with great music formats, but not particularly talent-led. So can Virgin Radio establish itself and become a 2 million radio station? Yeah, probably, with quite a bit of effort. I think the other thing with News is they have absolutely no desire to be the third place radio operator. You know, they do not go into markets to be number three. So this is strong organic growth from investing in their own products. You know, will we see more stations? Will we see more acquisitions? This is the beginning of their story, I think.
And do you know any gossip you can shed some light on for us, Steve, about why Chris might have been unhappy at Radio 2? Because there's nothing in his on-air personality, of course, to indicate that. But I suppose you are creatively constrained, even by that massive production team, from doing certain things on a massive mainstream show like that.
I'm afraid you're coming to the wrong person if you're looking for gossip. I mean, I wish I did have something to tell you, but I don't know.
The mics are off.
I don't know Chris Evans. Yep. And no, I don't have any gossip. I mean, the one other comment I wanted to add was just this for me feels very akin to when a top football club sign, you know, when Juventus sign Ronaldo and people go, God, the transfer fee is ridiculous. You go, well, hang on, you add up the shirt sales and you add up the marketing. And obviously, if you've got a very small station that isn't really performing but has a brand name that people might recognise, what a surefire way to now get attention and free marketing bucks. And already they've done that through all the PR that's being generated. And imagine what it's now going to be like when it gets towards launch, aided as well, obviously, by the might of the actual Murdoch newspapers who can then push that even further. So from a marketing perspective, I think this is super smart.
And just on the music, actually, as well, this interests me. Where do you put a new rock band now? Because you've got Moyles on Radio X and you've got Chris Evans on Virgin. The message seems to me to be, hey, did you like the 90s? Well, here's someone who's still playing those great songs you heard then by Nirvana and the Smiths songs that were 20 years old at the time. But what does it mean for trying to break new artists?
I don't know. Radio 1, Six Music, even a bit of Absolute, bit of Virgin, Kerrang. There's enough space if you want to find somewhere to play some guitar songs.
Okay, let's move on to Zoe Ball. Were you surprised?
Not at all. I think it would have been extraordinary, first of all, if Radio 2 hadn't appointed a female host. Mm. It was clear that just would have been a PR disaster. And so then you obviously start to look at the runners and riders. And, you know, clearly Sarah Cox was being mentioned a lot as well. There were a few outside names like Vanessa Feltz. But obviously the front runner had to be Zoe Ball.
Because she did the Radio 1 breakfast show?
No, not because she did the Radio 1 breakfast show. Because she is a consummate broadcaster. Because she has the heritage. And she does have the name recognition as well. And unfortunately, look, I mean, we make Sarah's show. So I love Sarah tremendously. And in one sense, I'm sort of quite pleased she's not moving. Because she's doing a brilliant job on the show she's on. But in another sense, I obviously feel disappointed on her behalf. But you can't get away from the fact that Zoe Ball probably has bigger name recognition amongst the mainstream audience. I mean, after all, she hosts the spin-off Strictly show. She is a well-known name. She is a good broadcaster. It kind of goes from there.
I wonder, Matt, though, whether she's anyone's favourite broadcaster.
So Radio 2's singular focus is 35 to 55-year-old women. That is, you know, when you read any of their commissioning docs, that's what they're after. And Zoe Ball appealing to that audience, and it's the younger end, kind of 35, 45, people who watch Live and Kicking, the Big Breakfast, Radio 1 breakfast show. She is a bigger name in people's minds than Sarah Cox is. She is well proven to work with mainstream audiences.
But is she anyone's favourite broadcaster?
Well,
I don't mean that to be nasty. She seems like a lovely woman, and I think she's very competent, but she's not.
But then I would probably, I mean, I,
exciting.
I like Sarah Cox a lot. But
Sarah Cox is some people's favourite broadcaster.
I think she is, but I don't think it's a large proportion of people particularly. You know, and this is partly because neither of them have had a lot of daily mainstream shows until recently. You know, Zoe doing some weekends. Obviously, Sarah's been doing their evenings for a little while now. But it's not a huge amount of time. Mm. So neither of them have been able to sort of build up that particular radio relationship. But I mean, I listened to the Chris Evans announcement, and I'm not normally a Chris Evans Radio 2 listener. And you know, that's a big, jolly show. It's not really particularly about Chris. You know, it's all about people and ideas and guests and all those sorts of things. So I think actually the move to Zoe Ball won't be a huge jump.
And Charlie Sloth is leaving Radio 1. What do we think of that?
Well, I mean... What I find fascinating about this is it's straight on the back of last week Semtex announcing he was going. It will be interesting to see where Charlie Sloth is going to.
So Semtex went to Spotify.
Semtex has gone to Spotify, which is obviously, that is the really fascinating twist on that story, that he's gone and signed up for Spotify for a 52-week series where he'll be interviewing big hip-hop names, but also doing documentaries around knife crime and all sorts of things. I mean, that's really fascinating that you can go to a talent and say, here is this broad sweep of stuff that we want to back you on. Charlie Sloth is a bigger name, and so it'll be interesting to see, is he going down a radio career and going to another station, or is it going to be a move to a Spotify or an Apple or somewhere else? And again, I mean, a bit like the Chris Evans story, it just reaffirms, I think, the point we were just making about there is this fantastic market going on for talent and for ideas, which is not just radio, but just audio in general. The fact you've got Semtex moving from a radio station to a platform who are really backing on-demand content with Charlie Sloth, let's see what happens. But look, that is a big blow for One Extra because he is one of their stars.
And he is more of a live radio name, isn't he, than Semtex? He's done Drive, hasn't
he,
on One Extra?
Yeah, I feel that Semtex probably reached the end of being on Radio 1 on One Extra and was going to have to move on. I mean, Charlie Sloth hasn't been doing The Eighth, which is a show that Radio 1 seems to be very much supporting. Has been doing it a huge amount of time as well. He is an interesting, different, divisive, you know, great characters have on the radio. I mean, my assumption would be he's off to Capital Extra. He himself, I think, is interesting. So I think he's got quite a big property empire. So, like, oddly, like, money isn't, I wouldn't have thought, a huge, or money from the radio isn't a huge driver. Mm-hmm. And
This is the gossip I was looking for, Steve. That's all I wanted.
I didn't even know this. Charlie Sloth has a property.
Yeah, I think so. And like, but Charlie Sloth, where could he go on Radio 1 and 1 Extra? Would he ever get a better shift? And it's like, probably not. So if something pops up that's a bit more interesting on a Capital Extra, even again to a smaller audience, back to the sort of Chris Evans thing, does that sort of scratch his creative itch to grow his brand? And he's certainly, you know, and be the first one to say, in a very ego-driven, loud guy, you know, if he popped up on the Capital Extra breakfast show, that might be something that he thinks is quite interesting.
I suppose the interesting thing is 5 years ago, the BBC was always actually pretty good at nurturing talent and moving them from one network to another. And you know, your career was basically at the BBC until they deemed it otherwise. And when you look at people like Trevor Nelson or Giles Peterson, that's exactly what's happened. They've sort of morphed through the different networks, and obviously ultimately you end up on Radio 2 or 6.
Yeah, hanging there for 25 years, you get the Radio 2 breakfast show.
Yeah, well, I suppose with Charlie Sloth and Semtex, I think that's quite a jolt for the BBC, seeing talent walk out the door, who they would have probably expected to still have quite a number of years left with.
And just moving from radio to telly, we still don't know who the Dimbleby replacement's going to be on Question Time, but we do know a bit about their piloting process, and it is actually doing it, isn't it? They're doing dry runs of Question Time with some very established names from the news and current affairs scene.
They are, but I think that's a good thing. I think it's you know, it's a big show. You never quite know until you put them in the seats and see what they're like, even if they've, you know, Kirsty Walk or whoever has been very successful at what they've done. So isn't that a good thing, being open to seeing how that works?
I do wonder, though, until you actually have the real politicians there being put on the spot.
I think they're there in the pilots. I think they've...
Are they using real politicians as well?
I think they are using more junior politicians.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, I didn't really understand the noise about this, in the sense of course you should be piloting. As Matt said, it's a major show. Why wouldn't you pilot?
Why wouldn't you put Joe and Simon together and see if they like each other? Staying with radio, sort of, because we're talking about global now, but this is advertising. They are launching themselves onto the street with the acquisition of two outdoor advertisers. So they're going to be a street ad provider now. They're going to make billboards, basically sell billboards. Steve, Global say they want to enable smart opportunities for advertisers with this. What do you think they can do that Clear Channel can't?
Well, it's just about joining everything up, isn't it? It's really about being able to join up buyers across multiple platforms. My understanding is it's a bit similar to the radio advertising market, in that at times it has really struggled, and certainly at the moment I think it's having a sort of tougher time. So in a sense you think, well, this is actually really quite smart that you can dive in and immediately place yourself in a really significant place in this market. I think it's put some, is it number two in that marketplace, the second or third biggest company in that marketplace. It is smart, and you know, I think when you look at the history of Global and when it first got set up and where they are now with the live festival stuff as well, I think they are becoming quite a formidable business.
Matt, if you ran Global, would you buy an outdoor advertising company?
Well, I think it is a good thing to do. I think it totally fits in with their strategy. Also, they spent what seems to be £200 to £300 million on these two companies. You know, this isn't like we bought some billboards. I mean, they're one of the big players now. And I was reading some of the write-ups about it, and a lot of people who were saying, oh, the cozy world of outdoor has suddenly got a new entrant in who might have some different views. And, you know, we know from the radio sector, they often disagree with everyone, do not care what other people think, and they push on with their own strategy, and they normally have quite a lot of success with it. I think for what they've got is obviously the radio business, a festivals business, and a digital advertising business called DAX, which kind of inserts audio adverts dynamically. Why can't you bring DAX to digital outdoor using similar systems to buy campaigns across radio and outdoor?
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? People, when they think of outdoor, now think of sort of three billboards outside Ebbing, don't they? But actually, it is digital. So you could, theoretically, couldn't you, with a big campaign, have it running across all of Global's radio stations and TV stations, and then on digital billboards at the exact same second?
Also local as well as national. I think that's the other bit. And I think outdoor campaigns can be national, but also they can be targeted to certain areas.
So you sell them a package, heart plus billboards.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also that cozy point that Matt made, very reminiscent of when Global came into the radio industry, and the same old faces in all different forms, but have basically been running that industry for sort of 20 odd years, and they came in and absolutely shook things up to a really significant degree. So sounds like potentially that that could happen again.
I think the other thing on Global, someone said to me that I thought was interesting was, you know, these are big acquisitions and they have got deep pockets and, you know, a founder family that is well off. But, you know, when you're spending £200 or £300 million, you know, these are big deals. You know,
they're big gambles, arguably.
They are. But like to grow any further, actually, does Global need to maybe float? And bring in a load of more money to do bigger things and more things. You know, and in the radio sector, even though they're the biggest broadcaster, well, they're probably the smallest company. You know, Bauer and News are bigger organisations. So, you know, the modern media world's about scale, and they're definitely building up their scale.
And I've not seen an answer to the question, well, actually, I've not seen anyone ask the question, whether LBC, as now an increasingly credible multi-platform news brand, might have an issue with being owned by a company that makes all of its money by selling advertising. Because if a story comes up, you know, on the day of recording, McDonald's workers are on strike. If that story comes up and your biggest client is McDonald's for digital outdoor advertising, it's hard to imagine there wouldn't be an email to the presenters saying, maybe don't mention this, don't focus on it.
Who knows? I mean, I think there's always rumours that there are such issues. I think, oddly, when you get to bigger companies like that, it gets harder to keep track of what everything's doing to try and keep everyone on message. But yeah, I think that's, of course, that could be a challenge for any media company.
But it's not something that, like I say, people seem to be asking or worried about at the moment. Ofcom haven't said anything about it, have they?
No, and obviously there's Ofcom rules around that sort of thing, so yeah.
Big business story as well whilst we were away, the biggest really of the year when you zoom out, I guess, is that 21st Century Fox did lose its bid to take full control of Sky after Comcast won a sealed bid. We asked both of you guys for your predictions most years on the media podcast. No one predicted this. No one even mentioned Comcast back in January, did they?
No. I mean, it just shows the assumptions about the media world are changing, particularly from telecoms companies and you know, big, large organisations that are into content and distribution. I think there's a complexity around Sky. You know, Disney are taking over the whole organisation. They did want Sky, but also they get, in effect, like a £15-20 billion dividend of selling their shares to Comcast that they can put into the new Disney Life, you know, Disney Netflix incarnation. And also, I think Comcast own a chunk of Hulu, and Disney might take all of Hulu now, which means they've got like a premium Netflix tenner a month thing, and then Hulu a sort of ad-funded Netflix thing. So there's probably more machinations behind the scenes than it seems. I think the crazy thing is that Sky News has somehow got some like regulatory free pass that it gets to exist forever, well funded, for, I don't want to say for no apparent reason, but for the government being argued by the opposition about support of the Murdochs means that Sky News is now funded forever. Just seems a weird thing.
And who's it funded forever by? Because I got confused.
Whoever's left with owning it.
Well, is it Disney, I think?
It's a 10-year guarantee, yeah, isn't it?
No,
it's
from Comcast now.
Yeah.
That's gone to Comcast as well.
But it's a 10-year guarantee.
Okay. And what do you think Comcast are actually going to do with Sky? Because they're a really big player in Europe, aren't they? And that is something Comcast wanted.
Well, it is interesting, isn't it? This is all obviously wrapped up in the bigger play of Netflix, Amazon, and how we're all consuming content. I suppose the key question, or certainly for someone like me, is what does it mean for content funding and what's going to happen there? Sky One's always struggled a little bit to have its identity and to know what it's about. Mm. At the same time, you know, Sky has done brilliantly, obviously, on sport. It's completely redefined what sport's about. But and those rights this year have gone a bit cheaper, so in a sense, you think, okay, that's quite interesting. But that market is hotting up. Movies aren't really the premium they once were. Sky Arts has played a great role, certainly politically, for Sky, and sort of saying, look, you know, the BBC isn't the only place you can get this sort of content from. And I suppose it'd be interesting to see how they tie in with their US operations and the content coming out of the US operations, and are there more properties they can then bring over for a UK or European audience.
It's not sexy to talk about the box itself, but I've actually just been on holiday in Florida, staying in an Airbnb, and they had Comcast's premium box installed in all the rooms. It's called Xfinity, and it's shit.
Well, yeah, well, one of the announcements was that pretty much all the Sky technology will just be sucked in and blown back out to the other markets.
I think that would... I mean, if I was an American and I was an Xfinity subscriber and I got something like Sky Q, that might make me stay.
Yeah.
So that is a big play as well, potentially.
Absolutely. And also, big global deals around their own content. You know, Disney are not going to license their TV shows and films to other broadcasters anymore because they're going to retail it direct to consumer. I was thinking the other day, all of the people who work for, you know, selling ABC sitcoms to other markets, and all those people will probably disappear, because why would they be doing that so much anymore? All those deals being run down. So
you're not actually saying Bob Iger will have them killed.
Well, I don't think the market's that cutthroat yet, but we'll have to see. Mickey can be a tough customer.
Tell me about it.
But yeah, I'm kind of interested to see that, you know, for Comcast as well, if they're not going to be sold any of these things, if Disney Channel disappears off of Sky or all of their platforms, they need their own content to hold back from Disney and Netflix and Amazon.
And actually, in the kids' space, Sky are quite reliant on Disney, aren't they? And Nickelodeon, I guess.
Well, they've sort of got everyone at the moment, and Sky and Nick and Cartoon Network and Sony are in it with the kind of pop TV channels. But again, as soon as we see Disney having a very kids-focused app, you know, what does that mean for Nick and Viacom that own it, and where do they put their content? And you know, in America, CBS has its own sort of Netflix service. Is that rolled out internationally? You know, at the moment, they're building stuff like Star Trek and Star Trek spin-offs, which sits on CBS in America, but it sits on Netflix in UK and around the world. But for how long?
Well, as father to a two-year-old, may I say that whoever owns the rights for Paw Patrol and Blaze and the Monster Machines is going to be okay. I'd pay an extra £20 a month if I had to shut him up. We'll have more news in brief after this. This episode of the Media Podcast was recorded at Run VT in the heart of Soho. Run VT has offline and online suites 15 and 2, respectively, as well as this very beautiful Baselite grading studio where I'm sitting right now. The Run VT pick of the week, by the way, is Channel 5 series Walking Britain's Lost Railways with Rob Bell, Friday nights 9 p.m. and on demand at My5. To edit your next show like they did at RunVT, go to runvt.tv now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Time for some media news in brief now. Steve and Matt still with me. And breaking this morning, as we record on a Thursday, is the story that most of the Daily Telegraph's politics, business and rugby coverage is about to disappear behind their premium paywall. That's to drive up subscribers. It is just an extension of their existing policy, which appears to be working, though, Steve.
Yes, the extension is widening it out. I think I'm right in saying that they have a target of trying to get 10 million sign-ups, and already this year, I think, is right, they've had 3 million. So they're making really good progress. And obviously, the next stage of that is widening out the amount of content that's behind the paywall. And and I think it's interesting when you look at, say, rugby as an example, where they've chosen not to put football behind a paywall because that's very accessible everywhere and not necessarily associated just with the Telegraph, though their football coverage is very strong. But they have put rugby behind a paywall because that's much more of a natural home for rugby content. I can see that as being a very successful move. So, and you know, similarly with business, their business coverage obviously competes with people like the Times, but is very strong. It's smart, and I'm sure it will work for them.
You do sort of get frustrated into paying up, though, don't you, Matt? That's the only issue with it that I see.
The only consumption of Telegraph I have is getting bounced in from social clicks and those sorts of bits. And they're the one where I think mostly I've got a login, and like sometimes you get a free one and sometimes you don't. But I hit the there is no more for you, Matt, page way more often than anyone else. Can't open a private tab and still log in, or you know, all that stuff doesn't work. I just won't consume any Telegraph media. I won't be exposed to them as a brand or understand that rugby is really great that they do. I'm never going to buy the print edition.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because I wonder if there's a demographic issue there. As opposed to the Times, so I'm 37, I will buy a paper copy of the Times occasionally. I'm too young to buy a paper copy of the Telegraph. So my only consumption of the Telegraph was online. It wasn't like the Times, where I would occasionally buy the paper.
Yeah, so I mean, their view might be, doesn't matter, as long as we get enough subscribers, it's fine, and we'll own some verticals. But no, I mean, I don't see how I can get into Telegraph content with that as a strategy. I think the other bit's interesting with Telegraph is actually they're doing quite a big push into, you know, audio and free-to-air audio, so maybe that's the way in, I don't know.
Well, the challenge, obviously, for all of the newspapers is it's an industry that's struggling, and they have to, I think they're finally waking up to the fact they've got to be a bit more revolutionary in trying to find new revenue streams. And so, you know, as we've seen, there's been lots of experimentation going on the past years with the Times and the Guardian, and this is just really the latest iteration of that they've got to start experimenting. They've got to dive into video and audio and other places, because the old model is a broken model and ultimately is not going to work.
Well, and I guess all of what we used to think of as quality broadsheets now, so the FT, the Times, the Telegraph, the Guardian, are asking for money in some form, or they've gone the way of the Independent, which, frankly, it's a brand, isn't it? It's not the same as it used to be.
Well, I think, the Independent has jettisoned its brand and turned into...
It's BuzzFeed, isn't it, basically?
Well, no, it's not even the quality of BuzzFeed, is it? I mean, it's really, really clickbaiting. You land on those pages and there's like 17 ad units and about 300 trackers. Yeah, they have jettisoned any idea that they what they used to be.
So paywalls have won, is my point.
But then the Guardian hasn't got a paywall, has generated loads of money from donations. You know, I never would have said that would work, but they've got enough affinity with their audiences that maybe don't want to spend £5 a month, £10 a month, but will chuck some money in effect a tip jar, but it's a tip jar that makes them 50, 60 million quid.
Okay, latest in the war between Amazon and Netflix is that Prime have signed Neil Gaiman and Bear Grylls in a bid to keep subscribers hooked. Good move, Steve?
Well, it's all about premium content, isn't it? And with Neil Gaiman with the writing, with Bear Grylls as a visible sort of brand, I suppose.
He's everywhere, though.
He is everywhere, but don't forget, he's massive in the States as well as the UK. So if you're going to sign him exclusively, that provides you with a significant audience who instantly recognise what he's about, and therefore for his type of content may come to it. It's pretty similar, isn't it, to the Jeremy Clarkson move, in the sense of an audience who will recognise what he stands for.
So does that mean he is going from all the shows that he's associated with at the moment, then?
I don't know.
If it is exclusive, that means presumably...
I don't know either, but...
The Island Without Bear Grylls.
Well, saying that, The Island with Bear Grylls, there's like three cutaways an episode where it's like, they're having trouble, aren't they? They didn't like the look of that pig, and then it's done. You could do it. You could green screen old bits of Bear Grylls into those things.
I think the key question with Bear Grylls is, when he's working for Amazon, is he still going to be allowed to wear his Bear Grylls branded jumpers that he wears on every TV show you see him presenting?
But no one else wears. That's the weird thing. It's like the whole line exists only for him to wear. And Matt, do you remember the show that he's allegedly rebooting, Eco Challenge, from the first time round?
Oh, I'm not aware of it.
No, Steve?
Well, I'm probably the oldest person in the room, but I don't remember it either.
No, not exactly a trusted brand. However, Dad's Army, I mean, say what you like about Dad's Army, and people have been for 60 years, it's still massive, isn't it, on BBC Two on a Saturday night. And Gold are filming lost episodes of Dad's Army. Is that right?
They are. But again, it's brand recognition, isn't it? You know, Gold is difficult for Gold to launch an original show. The cost of acquiring these scripts is probably a little bit more than what they'd pay for, you know, a similar new script, and instantly everyone would be like, oh, it's the same, oh, it's dreadful. I mean, generate loads of social discussion. I'm sure I'll be hooked into repeating the 15 episodes that exist of the bloody program, and a Channel 5 top 100 Dad's Army moments style show, I'm sure, will sit alongside it.
Sounding cynical to me.
No, I agree with him.
A new podcast to showcase the best of BBC local stories launches on the 10th of October, hosted by producer Becca Briers. It's called Multi-Story. Matt, what is it?
So this is the best of local radio stories in podcast form.
Yeah, you've just pretty much summarised it accurately.
Yeah, I think it's sort of... I haven't listened to it, so they might do a great...
It doesn't start till the 10th of October, okay. So one's listened to it.
So what I hope they do is something that doesn't go on and on about this being a story from BBC Radio Northampton and this one from Derby. No one cares about that. Mm. If it's focused on great storytelling that happens to come out of those places, you know, that small difference makes such a difference to how people consume this material. All of the evidence points to any form of catch-up, radio catch-up in podcasts, does not work. And I'm kind of ignoring... Radio 4 type programs where it's a big brand or it's something that exists, but like a best of the Moyle show or a best of something just doesn't work. It doesn't rate. It's not in any of the charts. I don't know what my hook would be to listen to this.
I think this is actually about, so it is about taking stories and including, that includes old stories where they might, so I think the example they've given in the press release is the story of a guy who'd never been out outside of his village, and they travel on the train with him to London or something, and then they've gone back and revisited him to find out what happened to his story. It feels to me like a slightly cheap British version of This American Life. However, as Matt says, no one's heard this, so let's give them a chance.
Well, we do know there are hard-working journalists and producers in local radio stations across the country reporting really interesting things that never get heard.
Yeah, and there's obviously, on a local level, that is the place to find those really fascinating human interest stories that could grip you. But it's really all in the production and the storytelling. When you think about what the great American podcasts do, so much of that is in the narrative of the host and really... great writing, actually, even though it's audio, it's great writing. And so it'd be interesting whether BBC local radio journalists have that ability.
And also, I think the packaging of that, you know, can you understand what you're going to get from the cover art, from the title, from the trailer that sits around it? You know, it is really hard to establish a podcast now. There's a lot of great people coming into the sector. You know, BBC themselves seemingly churning out a couple of new, you know, podcasts a week from the central team. You know, this is who you're competing with to get to be known.
Multi-story, not a great title either, is it really? I mean, it's no This American Life, is it?
Perhaps not.
I'd listen to it though, by the way. I'm actually quite interested to hear that. But I do wonder whether you were saying it takes the brands away from the local stations if they're smart. But then you possibly are arguing against the local stations in the first place and saying, well, if I am as interested in a man from Liverpool when I'm in Devon, why is it on Radio Merseyside?
It also depends what your desire is. You know, if you want to be the number one podcast in Northampton by having a great, you know, Northampton angle on something, that's a cool ambition to have.
But that's not what this is.
If you want to try and be a national thing that comes out of some great local producers, that's a more complex skill to execute on.
Okay, time for our own national phenomenon. It is, of course, the media quiz.
Hurrah!
This week, we're pitting our guests against the brains behind Radio 4's new Today programme puzzle book, priced $12.99. I'm going to read a question. If you know the answer, you buzz in with your name. So, Steve, you will say...
Steve.
And Matt, you'll say...
Matt.
Okay, fastest voice box first. Let's play these genuine questions from the Today programme puzzle book. France is Marseille, Germany is Hamburg, Italy is Milan, Spain is Barcelona. What is the UK?
Matt.
London. It's a good guess. It's wrong. Steve, would you like to contest?
Well, I'm only going to guess a city name. Manchester.
If you were right, that would be great, but you're wrong. The answer is Birmingham. Any ideas why?
Second city?
Yes, they are all the second largest cities in each country by population. Yeah. Okay, question number two. They were patented in London in 1845, and Colombian drugs baron Pablo Escobar was spending $1,000 a week on them at the height of his success. But what are they?
Matt. Rubber bands.
Yes! Wow. You've read a press release, haven't you?
No.
Is it in Narcos?
I've seen Narcos.
Is it? Yeah. Okay, well done.
I was trying to think of... I've seen Narcos as well. I was trying to think, what is it I've seen? Yeah. The logic there is good, though.
Okay, question number three. What comes next? Two-faced god, war god, spring goddess, what? When you know, you'll kick yourself.
Matt.
I mean, Matt, you've won anyway, but go on, yeah.
Animal god.
He's game. I like the fact that he's had a guess, don't you?
I feel humiliated in this edition of the media quiz.
It's like when you watch Only Connect all over again.
Yeah. As if the brand values of Radio 4 are to make people feel stupid. The answer, of course, is Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar. They are the sources for the names of every other month, starting at January. January is named for Janus, the two-faced god. March for Mars, the god of war. May for Maya, the spring goddess. July, of course, for Julius Caesar. Kicking yourself, aren't you, Steve?
I am kicking myself.
Well, Matt, congratulations. You are today's winner with one right answer. And thank you to Steve Ackerman as well. If you like what we are up to here on the Media Podcast and you want to help us keep making it, then do consider taking out a voluntary subscription. Every episode is dedicated to a subscriber like Rachel from Berkeley, California. Rachel is a software developer and likes to listen while she's walking around her neighbourhood or swimming laps. If you want to be more like Rachel, and frankly, who wouldn't, visit themediapodcast.com/donate and select an amount to keep us going all year round. And of course, you can always catch up with previous episodes and get new ones as soon as they're released by subscribing for free on our website, themediapodcast.com. If you haven't yet heard Michaela Cole's full McTaggart lecture or the Dairy Girls Masterclass from the Edinburgh TV Festival, please do add them to your list. They are worth your time. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer, Rebecca Grisdale-Sherry. The Media Podcast is a PPM production. Until next time, bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.